Friend for Life. The first time I met Charlie Johnson, I was getting pounded into the playground dirt by Butch Mattingly and a bunch of his Neanderthal friends. We were in fifth grade on spring break from Jerome Marco K through 8. My cousin Adam was out of town with his folks, and I'd gone to the baseball field, hoping for a pickup game, when Butch and his gang spotted me.
"Hey you, Tubbo, come here," Butch had growled at me.
My head shot up. Butch, Doug Hawthorne, Pete Middlebur, and Sam Spaulding all had similar lopsided grins on their faces. I was dead. If I hadn't just locked up my bike on the baseball diamond's backstop, I would have jumped back on it and sped away. Adam always says that you have to stand up to bullies, but he's a martial arts dude, and I'm not. Fleeing is a virtue when you wear glasses and the simian predators are lumbering in from the outfield. I tried to remember the lessons our Uncle Morris had taught about self-defense in situations like this, but the only one I could remember was, keep breathing. Duh!
Come here,
Butch insisted, even as he walked closer. Is there a baseball game today? I squeaked, even though the field was so empty it seemed like we were the only human beings for miles. And with Butch and Sam and Pete and Doug, I'm using the term human beings loosely.
Maybe we should use him for home plate, Pete sniggered. Or pretend his head's a softball and knock it out of the park, Sam said.
Forget it, Doug said. He wasn't quite as rotten as the others. Nobody else is showing up for baseball today. Maybe we should all just take off. I took that as my cue. Nobody's coming? Then I gotta get back and work on my social studies project. In retrospect, mentioning homework on vacation was a mistake. Most kids at Jerome Marco K through 8 did their homework at the last minute. My friends and I had the strange policy of doing it early and getting it out of the way. We knew we were weird, but it always made for a more relaxing break.
You're doing homework? Butch said. Maybe you can do ours.
They were only about 10 feet away by now. They were smiling. I tried to smile. Everybody was assigned a different country to write about. Mine's Guatemala, so I don't think...
You see, this is why you always get picked last, Butch said to me. You're just not a team player.
They moved in as a pack. Sam grabbed my left arm, Pete grabbed my right, and Butch kicked my feet out from under me with a sweep of his leg. I didn't crash to the ground, but I didn't float down either. There I was, sprawled along the third baseline, my feet aimed toward third and my head heading home, with Butch's fist cocked back for a quick rabbit punch to my jaw, when a loud voice interrupted.
Hey, can I help?
I turned my head as Butch's fist flew past my left ear, where it landed with a loud thump in the dirt.
Ow!
Butch yelled. He jumped up to see who'd blown his aim.
Ooh, said the voice. That's gotta hurt.
Sam and Pete let me loose enough to sit up and see what was going on. Heading across the field from the pitcher's mound was a kid who looked a lot like a big black bowling ball. He wasn't short, he wasn't tall, he was round, and he was black.
You need a hand?
Now, in those days, almost everybody at Jerome Marco was white. Butch was white, Sam, Doug, and Pete were white, I was white, my cousin Adam was white. We didn't think about it. My friend Jesus was Hispanic, and there was a kid in the seventh grade whose parents were from Africa, but the rest of us were straight-up Caucasian. The minority population in Groston was microscopic. Back then, decrepit mill towns in New England were full of poor white folk and a few lingering middle class, not poor black folk. There weren't many jobs, and if you didn't have a family in the area,
Why else would you move away from a big city or suburb? Later, I learned that Charlie's dad had gotten a job at the local Chevrolet dealership. Even later, I learned that Charlie was about the nicest human being on the planet. At that moment, though, I saw this immense black kid coming toward me with a baseball bat slung over his shoulder and had the first racist thought that I can remember. Oh no, I'm really dead. To his credit, Butch didn't seem to care what color this kid's skin was.
You want to help?
Butch said as he brushed the dirt off the knuckles of his right hand.
Sit your fat butt on his legs so he can't move.
The kid stopped short.
You calling me fat?
Butch looked the kid over. There weren't any straight edges to focus on. The kid's body was a sphere, with a head on top and arms and legs sticking out.
Yeah, I'm calling you fat.
Butch glanced at his friends, who nodded and sniggered. They stopped paying attention to me and actually let go. The new kid looked down at his body and gave a start like he was seeing himself for the first time.
Oh my God, you're right. I'm fat. I am fat.
Then he looked up.
Wait a second. Am I fat or do I have fat?
What? Butch said, always slow on the uptake.
Well, I have hands and feet, but you wouldn't say I am hands or feet.
Everybody's got hands and feet, Butch said. Not everybody's got fat.
Exactly my point. I got a mole on my neck, which not everybody's got, but you wouldn't say I am a mole.
More like an elephant, Pete said.
Or a whale,
Sam said.
A black whale, Butch said.
The kid's eyes widened again.
Wait, wait, wait. I'm black?
The kid looked at himself, again as if seeing himself for the first time.
Oh my God, I'm black!
By now I knew he was faking it, and I was doing my best to hold back a grin, but I also couldn't help but nod in agreement. The kid's skin was dark, really dark, like ebony wood or strong coffee before you added creamer or milk. Again, the kid kept talking.
My skin is black, except for the soles of my feet and my palms and my fingernails. My teeth are white. My hair and eyes are brown. My tongue is red. My blood is red. And my boogers are green.
Pete and Sam laughed at this. Doug looked uncomfortable. I slowly sat up, hoping to crawl away while everyone was distracted. Butch spotted the movement, gave me a look and said,
Sit.
I just moved into this neighborhood. The new kid's face turned into a scowl. I start school here next Monday, and I heard there was a pickup baseball game today.
We're starting by cleaning the field with this guy's face, Pete said.
Butch didn't look pleased that one of his underlings was speaking up, but he nodded in agreement.
What kind of weird rules do you guys play with?
The new kid said as he looked the ball field over. Our school, Jerome Marco K-8, was decrepit. Old bricks, old linoleum hallways, old fluorescent lights, old leaking windows, and doors that didn't always lock or shut because of warping. The playground was mediocre too, with old equipment, pockmarked blacktop, and a soccer field filled with gopher holes. But the baseball diamond was different. It was ours. We took care of it. We filled in the divots and weeded the pitcher's mound. Yes, the backstop was rusting, but there weren't any holes for foul balls to escape through. The new kid shrugged.
It looks clean to me. How about some batting practice?
How about you go away? Butch said.
How about you make me?
It got quiet. I'm sure there were birds chirping and wind blowing and cars driving down the road out in front. But right there and then, you could have dropped a pin in that dirt and heard it touch down. Butch took 3 steps toward the guy and loomed over him. From where I was sitting, It didn't look like a fair fight. Butch was at least 2 feet taller than the new kid, and there were 3 other guys ready to jump in and do their share of the butt-kicking. The whole situation really didn't look good. First, they would beat up the new kid, then they'd get back to pounding on me. So rather than keeping my mouth shut, I said, "I really could use some batting practice."
"Yeah, you suck," Pete said to me.
"Can't hit the side of a barn," Doug agreed. Butch glanced at his friends and realized that he'd lost the advantage. Then he scowled at the new kid.
"Thought you wanted to help."
The kid smiled.
"I do. I love to help. I am helpful."
Without another word, the kid walked right past Butch and stuck his hand out to me.
"I'm Charles Johnson," he said. "Let me help you up."
He grabbed my hand and pulled me onto my feet. I was glad to be standing up again. I told him my name.
"Who are these guys?"
Charles Johnson asked me.
"That's Pete, Sam, Doug, and Butch," I said.
Butch squinted.
"Charles? Charles? You don't look like a Charles. You look like a Charlie, a fat Charlie."
The rest of Butch's monkeys chuckled.
"Fat Charlie."
"Oh, I never heard that before." Charlie rolled his eyes at me. "You can call me Charles. You can call me Charlie. You can call me Fat Charlie. Just don't call me late to dinner."
Everyone laughed, including me, including Charlie. And that became his name. For the rest of our time at Jerome Marco K-8, Charlie Johnson was known as Fat Charlie. You might think that he resented something that was so clearly meant as an insult, but Fat Charlie wasn't like that. He really was kind and helpful and strong. Some kids like me could be wounded by words. Fat Charlie knew the truth of his physicality, took things the way they were, and realized that the nickname meant acceptance. Fat Charlie stuck out his hand to Butch, who grinned, paused, and then grabbed it. I inhaled sharply. Whenever we played a ball game, at the end, when it was time for the winners and losers to shake hands, Butch loved nothing better than to inflict knuckle grinders on the opposing team. He'd grab your hand in his paw, squeeze hard, and knead until it felt like your bones were about to break. Butch leaned in on Fat Charlie, who looked right up into Butch's face, and smiled. Butch squeezed. Fat Charlie smiled. Neither of them moved. Butch squeezed harder, and Fat Charlie smiled.
"All right?"
Fat Charlie asked.
"Fine,"
Butch said. I thought I heard the edge of a squeak in his answer.
"Batting practice?"
Charlie said. Butch seemed to be biting his bottom lip. He nodded.
"Swell,"
Charlie said.
"I'm up first."
He dropped Butch's hand. Butch staggered back, began opening and closing his fist, and massaging his sore and scraped hand with the one that was still working.
"Okay," Doug said. "I'll pitch." "On deck," I said.
"First base,"
Pete said.
"Outfield,"
Sam said, somewhat resigned. Everybody knew that Butch was always the catcher. And then, just like that, we started playing together. That's one of the things I miss most about being a kid. You could get into a real argument with somebody, practically hating each other, but when it came time to play baseball, all that was set aside and everybody just had fun. Over the course of the next half hour, more and more kids showed up, and the batting practice turned into a real game. Fat Charlie was good. Even though Doug was our best pitcher, Fat Charlie whacked just about every pitch and sent the ball flying into the outfield more times than not. He was running Sam ragged. My first at-bat, I managed a bunt, which Butch retrieved, but he missed the out by overthrowing to Pete on first. I tagged the bag and tried not to gloat. The sun was fading by the time we were done. My team, Fat Charlie's team, won by 2. When everybody else lined up to shake hands, Butch begged off, saying that he had to hustle home. "Good game," everybody said to Fat Charlie, and to me, "Good game." Finally, they were all gone. I was unlocking my bike, and I noticed that Fat Charlie was still hanging around. "I'm okay," I told him.
"I know you're okay," he told me. "Just enjoying the day."
"Thanks," I said. He shrugged. "Are you really all right with us calling you Fat Charlie?"
"Dude, I have been called so much worse."
For a moment, I saw a flicker of sadness and pain, and then it was gone. "You want to come over to my house?" I asked. "Mom's made Rice Krispie treats." Fat Charlie grinned.
"Rice Krispie treats are my middle name."
"Really?" I said.
"No."
He slugged me, gently, on the shoulder.
"My middle name is Donald, but if you tell anyone that, I'll have to kill you."
"Really?"
"No."
He grinned. I grinned. I pushed my bike. He walked along beside. And just like that, we were friends.